with that patient interaction, artificial intelligence could help make it more efficient, effective, as well as more likely to be accurate with the ultimate diagnosis and subsequent treatment. And then the doctor using a Da Vinci robotic system actually does the surgery. So as to the regulatory framework, and I think your question implicates some consideration of what is the right way to go. And I'll point out something that I've said over and over again is Congress, Washington, D.C., small money could actually influence a state legislature much more easily than 435 representatives and 100 senators. I think the state is best suited in a more nimble fashion to address these possibilities in spite of the variations of policies. And then,
welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to Regulating AI, the podcast dedicated to shaping the future of artificial intelligence governance. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri. Today, we are joined by a guest who brings a unique perspective to the AI debate, Congressman Mike Kennedy from Utah's 3rd District. Dr. Kennedy isn't just a legislator, he's also a practicing physician and an attorney. As a member of the freshman class in Congress and someone with extensive experience in healthcare, law, and state legislation, his insights on AI governance are particularly relevant. Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast, Congressman Kennedy.
Sanjay, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Wonderful. Congressman, we have a global audience, members of Congress and Senate like you, policymakers, staffers, entrepreneurs, etc. To them, you know, you're both a physician and a legislator. You know, in many conversations I've had with policymakers, they mention that healthcare probably is where we are going to see the maximum impact or the maximum value for this transformative technology. So as both a physician and a legislator, how do you see AI transforming healthcare delivery in the United States?
Sanjay, it's really interesting to think of the various implications, and I'll add to, so I'm a physician, I'm an attorney, I don't practice a law, but I've been trained in law school, and I've been a policymaker on the state level for 10 years. And I'm also a big science fiction guru since I was old enough to read. I've been reading lots of science fiction, and it's really interesting how today we're living in fact, the fact that you and I can visualize each other through this quote-unquote phone call is that I saw promoted when I had a phone on the wall with a 10-foot cord, and that was the extent of the privacy that I would get. And that communication, there was no way I could do visual with that. Right. But you and I can be distances apart, and the opportunity for us to talk and visualize is a reflection of things that I read about 40 years ago when I was a child, and thought, well, maybe, and here we are living it. So I'm as an expert in healthcare, I'm just a big fan of the opportunities artificial intelligence presents, and I'll give you one example of that. Mm-hmm. So each doctor, when somebody comes in with pain is a very common complaint, is what the doctor should do is do what's called a differential diagnosis. Mm-hmm. The differential diagnosis is a basic list of all the possible diagnoses that might be implicated with the patient's description of their symptoms. Mm-hmm. And what if the differential diagnosis could be generated by an artificial intelligence rubric that actually delivered a variety of possibilities and a complete list of differential diagnoses in real time while the doctor was talking to the patient, allowing them to have an opportunity to review that and then consider the most likely possibilities. So I don't see artificial intelligence as replacing, but augmenting what a doctor does, because there's a lot of very complicated things that happen in a patient interaction. And with that patient interaction, artificial intelligence could help make it more efficient, effective, as well as more likely to be accurate with the ultimate diagnosis and subsequent treatment.
So let's just follow your conversation. As you said, 40 years ago, what you're visualizing can't happen now. which leads to telemedicine also, you know, the conversation you and I are having. What about health equity? You think AI will also make a big difference? You know, look at rural parts, even of your state. You know, physicians, and I'm not pointing at you, generally don't tend to end up in small towns, rural areas, inner cities, etc. And that becomes a challenge for us. Do you think AI has the potential for bringing some kind of an equity as far as that is concerned?
It definitely does. Thanks for bringing that up, because that's, I mean, you and I could talk all day about the possibilities. And I'll give two examples. One is, just like you say, a lot of doctors, and that can be a family choice or just a convenience choice, is they're often trained in more urban or rural or suburban areas. And as a result, they just stay in the local area. That's kind of what they become familiar with and their families. Whereas many of our people live in areas that the doctor is not close to. And my brother is a physician assistant. I have many friends that are nurse practitioners at this. And so there's somebody around to see. But the question is, if you have especially a rare diagnosis, is there an expert in that's in the local vicinity? And the answer is, if you're in rural America, the answer might be no. Mm-hmm. But with telehealth opportunities is to consult. And really, Sanjay, what doctors give is intellectual capital to consult in a visual fashion, one-on-one, maybe even do an examination, not only physically of the person, visually, but also review of laboratory results and maybe CAT scans or MRIs or whatever to other data. Doctors give intellectual capital, and they could do that very well through telehealth mediums like we're doing right now. But here's another thing that some people may know about, but your listeners need to know about, is the opportunity for robotic surgeries that can be done. So there are some surgeries that are very delicate. For example, a pituitary, which is a gland deep in the brain. For a pituitary surgery, you better do a lot of those to do good at it, to make sure that the surgery is done well. And the idea with a robotic assistive device, and they've got these already, Da Vinci is one of the systems that I'm aware of, is the doctor usually sits in the same room, and they have the circulating nurses around the patient. The patient is anesthetized and on the table asleep, and they've been completely prepped for surgery. And then the doctor, using a Da Vinci robotic system, actually does the surgery. Wouldn't that be amazing for us to think about? The best surgeon in the United States of America could go to San Pete County in Utah, which has a small hospital and it's a great place, but they don't do a lot of pituitary macroadenoma surgeries there. Mm-hmm. And the idea that the best surgeon in the country could remote in with staff around to support and actually even do a surgery on somebody is a really interesting possibility. Of course, our conversation will discuss regulations, and there's nobody listening to this that would want incompetent or inappropriately delivered healthcare through these mediums. But the idea even to do surgery for somebody is something that could be done remotely, and I'd embrace the opportunities that come along with those possibilities.
Well, I think that would be incredible. As you said, in rural parts of America, inner cities, just the possibilities really open up out there. One of the things you talked about, Congressman, during your campaign is the potential for AI in education. So can you talk a little bit about that? But also, and you and I discussed this before, should medical education also start incorporating some of these things? Because medicine is changing. So from an education standpoint, as well as from a medical education standpoint, that for the people who are coming on the path, what are your thoughts for our listeners, Congressman?
So I think, Sanjay, you've spent a lot of time in classrooms listening to lectures, and I have too, a lot of lectures, law school and medical school. I've spent countless hours, I've never counted them up, but a lot of hours listening to lectures, and let's be honest, some of those professors did a better job than others. And the idea for us to find the best professor in an area, and not only with the capacity to present a lecture, but also even as we currently receive answers to questions, for a student to submit questions to that that framework that's presented by artificial intelligence. We both know that if you took the best lecturers, a dozen of them on a certain subject, and compiled all of the data, not only their published research, but all of their lectures, and then allowed artificial research to search when a question is asked and find the answer to that question based on all of the combined data, you might get an outstanding educational opportunity. But you asked specifically about medical education. So I'll give you an example of this. Is all over the country, people, when they die, they donate their body to medicine. They donate their body to help study. And the class is Gross Anatomy. It's a kind of passage, a ritualistic passage through medical school. Everybody's got to go through Gross Anatomy. And the resources of those bodies, I mean, each body, whether it's a male or female body, or it's old or young, or it has cancer, or it's got, each body is different, as we know that they would be. But the idea of, instead of an actual dissection, which is what the semester involves, is each group of students, usually it's a group of students too, that are given, let's say, five students per body, and they're supposed to dissect this body and learn from it. So they open up the chest cavity, they explore the heart, they check the chambers of the heart, the valves in the heart. That's it's labor intensive. It takes takes a lot of work. Some people say it's a prep for surgery, surgical skills, but a dead body is not a living body and it acts very differently. So I'd say it's, I don't know that it's that surgically accurate, but it's the best we've got. But for us to think about, well, how about one student with one virtual body that is indicative of the average body that we should learn about, and the student can actually do a dissection of that virtual body and do it on their own time. They don't have to go to a formaldehyde laden lab. They don't have to have lab hours. They could have that on their computer at home, and they already have those systems as well. They're outstanding systems that allow photographic. It's a highly accurate anatomical detail, whether virtual or actual photographs, and the individual can do their own dissection. So, and it's one-on-one instead of five-on-one, where somebody might get a great experience and the other three don't get as much. So I think there's multiple opportunities for education generally, as well as medical education, for us to use artificial intelligence.
So things are going to change, and that's really fascinating because it, as you said, you can bring the best and the brightest and bring them to the students, ingest that data. Congressman, just shifting a little bit towards rules and regulation, we'll come back to medicine a little bit. You know, there have been questions, and I've had guests come in and talk about how patients' medical data is used or can be used or should be used. And then the other aspect of it is, maybe there are two separate questions, is we have had HIPAA, and HIPAA has been there now for, I don't know, for now a long period of time without many changes. So the question really is, in terms of medical patient data, now we need some of this because you need that data to come up with AI, machine learning, to use that to come up with some kind of answers. But then there is also the issue of privacy. But then all the other question is also about, what do you think about HIPAA? Should there be any changes given AI? So just a series of questions around that, if you could just provide some
feedback. That broaches the regulatory framework that I think is necessary for everything. Is there? I'm not a libertarian. I'm a Republican. We need some regulations, but I'm also not a dictator in the form of let's shut everything down and the government controls everything. So it's an important question. And Sanjay, I'll say for the doctors and the patients, my personal information, my doctor information, my social security number, my personal identifiers, my name and birth date, that I have to submit all of those to the numbers of insurance in the dozens. All of that information has been submitted, and my identity has been stolen at least three times, probably multiple times. And subsequently, I've had major personal challenges in the form of people renting cars in other states under my name, getting in multi-car pileups, insurance claims from that. But worse than that, as I was sued as the perpetrator of the crash, when in fact it was a stolen identity. Somebody put their picture on my driver's license and rented the car in my name, and subsequently got in a crash, and then there was a lawsuit after. So it actually took 4 years for us to get that settled, and countless hours as well as a lot of money to try to defend myself. So patient and doctor confidentiality is a big deal to me. I've been subject to that. The other thing that I'll say disturbingly is your insurance company already knows all too much about your personal health information. They're supposed to be on only an as-needed basis, but I'm afraid they probably have a lot more information than many of us would be comfortable with them having. So as to the regulatory framework, and I think your question implicates some consideration of what is the right way to go, and I'll point out something that I've said over and over again is Congress, Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. There's a lot of good people around here trying to do good things, but many times it's a meat cleaver rather than a scalpel. And we need surgical precision when we're doing these things, especially when it comes to an extremely valuable technology that could be used for bad, but it also could be used for good. Mm-hmm. So I, as a 10-year state legislator, I'm a big fan of the laboratories of democracy that our states have. In fact, I'll point out the state of Utah already has stepped into this space. We've developed an artificial intelligence czar that is working with our research institutions in the state of Utah to develop policies on a more granular, scalpel-like basis to try to develop policies that are workable. Sanjay, for your information, I'll say I was a state senator last year when we passed that. And this year, and I'm not in the state legislature anymore, obviously, because I'm in Congress, but they're already refining that this year because it went too far in certain areas. It was too restrictive. I don't know the details of that policy, but the capacity for the state to respond quickly to not only develop policy, but also change it. Whereas Congress, it takes a long time to get anything done around here, is a good example of, I think the regulatory framework, especially with something new, is best done on a state-to-state basis, which presents its own problems of the patchwork quilt of regulations, but it gives us an opportunity to foment the best policies and bring them, the best policies will percolate to the top, and then Washington may need to step in.
So, I mean, that you made an interesting point. It leads to that question of what is the role of the state versus the federal? The European Union has this comprehensive AI Act. They also have GDPR, which is the privacy. We don't have that. We are not going to have a comprehensive AI Act in terms of conversations I've had with your colleagues on this podcast. So states are going to jump in. As you said, they are the laboratories of democracy. But if you are a small company, Congressman, if you have to start then abiding by rules in, let's say, Utah and California and Colorado, there might be some variations, Vermont, on and on and on. And then across the world, if you're a large company with large deep pockets and lawyers, etc., what is that perspective for some of these things? Because AI is in many cases driven by, and our country is driven by, these small entrepreneurs too.
And we'd want to make sure that those entrepreneurs have the chance to innovate without too much overregulation. And this is where my personal philosophy is first hands off. I've had a lot of people concerned about artificial intelligence and the possible damage it would do. That's true for any new technology. There are things that we don't know as to how it will translate into society in a positive or negative fashion. But I think the idea in the state of Utah to start off with a framework, but not absolute regulation, that they actually, it was pretty general outlines. They created an office. They found that those general outlines were unworkable. And actually, interestingly, as a small company with small money could actually influence a state legislature much more easily than 435 representatives and 100 senators. That we have 29 senators in the state of Utah and 75 representatives. It's much easier to reach out to them. Plus, often your neighbors. I mean, you know each other. You live in the same county, the same city, or whatever. So the patchwork quilt is a problem because when a small company is confronted with other states' regulations, that can become a problem when they're divergent in the regulations. But at the same point, the flexibility to modify, especially early on as we develop this, I think is more important than the absolute right regulation, because invariably, no matter what we start with, we're going to get it wrong on the regulation at first. We'll be over or under restrictive. We'll develop problems. I think the state is best suited in a more nimble fashion to address these possibilities in spite of the variations of policies. And then when we do find that there is a policy that's important, we can pass that on the federal level so that we eliminate the patchwork quilt. We get more uniformity. But when we get more uniformity, we get less innovation associated with that. So we have to be careful, and there is a kind of pushing the balloon on one side to get a bulge on the others. When we make regulations, it can be like that.
So more, you know, push it from the state up and then try to get something that's the best coming out of different states at the federal level. I think that's an excellent point. Congressman, recently there has been this conversation, even Vice President Vance at the Paris AI event also mentioned about the United States is going to lead in AI. I wouldn't call it the AI arms race, but the AI race or whatever you want to call it. How do we make sure, there is this question always comes in as innovation versus responsible AI, because AI could have potential, whether it's in intellectual property, biases, etc. What are your thoughts in terms of, obviously, we want to make sure United States is ahead, but how do we balance it with in a responsible way?
Very important what you're saying, and I'll point to a really basic component we haven't talked about yet, and that's the cost of electricity. All of this is going to be generated by electricity. Yeah. We need to make sure that the United States is not only AI dominant, but also energy dominant. And that's something the Republican Party is focused on. President Trump, I'll point to him as well, as he's already declared an energy emergency, and all hands on deck to generate energy as cheaply as possible, because obviously we could have the best technology on the planet, but if it's prohibitively expensive, we won't have it. Other countries will have it. So, and then the second thing with generating cheap energy is making sure that we're not destroying innovation by over-regulating. You pointed out Europe earlier, and there's a reason why Europe doesn't lead on many things, and it's because they often have a deep bureaucratic state that makes it really difficult for a new business to get started. And if it does get started, it often has a hard time continuing forward. And the artificial intelligence dominance is a vital component of our long-term future and what we've talked about with healthcare. Imagine the national defense implications of this. Imagine the war games possible through virtual modalities. And I'm no war expert. I don't know how they would do this, but the idea of looking at various powers, plugging in data, and then getting calculations about the best way to fight our enemies in whatever circumstance we're in, or the best way to quell our enemies one way or the other. These are important considerations that if we have innovation and we're also maintaining a regulatory framework, then we'll be able to move ahead of any other country on the planet. But we also know, and your listeners know, that China is a formidable foe. They don't have a lot of the considerations that we have for human rights or energy, environmental concerns. And as a result, they can move ahead with only the Chinese Communist Party dictating how this goes. And so I think the United States of America needs to encourage our innovators, considering we were the first out on this. And we should maintain that lead by having cheap energy and also allowing these innovators to innovate. I think the best way to do that is a light hand touch to the regulatory framework.
Yeah, I think you made an excellent point. Energy is a key component. A lot of your colleagues who come in here say for us to get energy, and I don't want to get too driven in that, is permitting reform that happens in the United States. Do you think that's a possibility happening sometime in the future, Congressman?
It sounds like, and I was just with some energy-focused informers earlier who were talking to me about various considerations, and the answer is the Senate and the House are both focused on permitting reform. So that, and you know, Sanjay, it's not just generating the electricity, you got to deliver it. So we need power lines that go across our country, and to find those corridors is challenging when it takes 10 years because of environmental consideration. You got to do studies, NEPA studies and things. That can make it really difficult, time intensive to even string the power lines, let alone build the power plant. So I'm a big fan of all hands on deck energy. I'm a big fan of nuclear, and geothermal is another that I need to learn more about, but it could be outstanding. And natural gas as well as coal and oil, and in addition, the solar and the wind. All of these are available in the United States of America, and we're energy rich, and we need to make sure that we not only have the cheap energy, but we can transmit it all over the country. That's what's going to power our artificial intelligence long term and help us to maintain and actually promote our dominance in artificial intelligence long term.
Congressman, there have been all kinds of conversations. McKinsey, IMF say, hey, we could lose 30 to 60% of white collar jobs because of AI, because AI can do coding, AI can do customer service, etc. And obviously, AI will also create many new jobs. Any thoughts that you have, or what would be the role of Congress, or is there a role for Congress in terms of looking at something like this?
The disruptive technology that you're describing associated with this, it makes me think of the self-checkout at the grocery store. Is when I was a child, every time I bought anything, there was always a clerk to actually punch numbers on a kind of typewriter to enter in the code of whatever I was buying. And then there were computerized cash registers over time. And now I can, with a credit card, actually no cash at all, and also with no clerk, I can check out at the grocery store. So we've displaced a bunch of grocery workers, but the answer is somebody needs to stock the shelves. Somebody needs to actually help. I'll point to healthcare as well, is that there are multiple opportunities for us to improve efficiencies and actually have people focus on healthcare in a way that is really necessary. So for example, if I were to actually point out that when it comes to healthcare, if I have a nurse in the room and she's actually gathering the data with the assistance of artificial intelligence, and the doctor, normally I could see 20 to 25 people, but if I could see 50 or 60 people because of artificial intelligence speeding me up, it's going to be easier for people to access. Instead of waiting for 2 weeks to get in to see the doctor, you can actually get in the next day, because the doctor and staff will spend a proper amount of time with you to get to you to the right diagnosis, but it's not going to take the doctor 25 minutes. It can take the doctor 5 minutes because of the gathering of information, a lot of regular things that have been done by the doctor that actually could be done by artificial intelligence and other staff members.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Congressman, finally, are there any, you've been in healthcare for a long time. We talked a little bit about HIPAA. Are there any lessons from healthcare regulation that could be applied? I mean, you talked about the light touch, using more of a surgical touch to healthcare regulation. Are there any lessons from healthcare regulation that could be applied to AI governance as we move forward?
It's a great example of how overregulated we are in healthcare. In fact, besides maybe nuclear, I think healthcare is so regulated it becomes problematic. Much of what's in HIPAA is already I'm already ethically bound. HIPAA only put in code and put teeth behind it. Mm-hmm. And I believe many of these things were already being done before HIPAA was put into place. So I would apply this I'll just say, Sanjay, a lot of the things that have happened to us in healthcare are way overdone, which is why coming to Washington, D.C., I want this place to do less, because HIPAA and other things, I have to do a HIPAA training every year. Mm. say it's one of the most worthless hours that I spend in my whole year is to sit there and watch a video of somebody telling me what I've already known how to do for 25 years. In addition, they have regulations that tell us how to do our physical exams for Medicare recipients. I don't need that. I spent 4 years in medical school, 3 years in residency to learn how to do a physical exam. So I'd apply the same to artificial intelligence. We don't need to tell these innovators how to do their work. I would like them to think broadly. Think, shoot for the stars, and then as we apply this, and if we see issues, then we address those as they develop. But right now, for example, I believe we could have self-driving cars. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. But they're restricted by a variety of state laws that won't allow them to fully execute on that capacity. So when it comes to artificial intelligence, data is power. And if we can have accurate data and analysis from AI, I'm very excited about the possibilities, not only in healthcare, but throughout our country. So light touch, let's make sure we don't damage or destroy this possibility or give the upper hand to our adversaries around the world.
Well, I think that's fantastic, Congressman. Light touch, do not give advantage to our adversaries. What I would say, Congressman, is you bring really a unique perspective, and I hope you stay engaged. There are a few physicians, we've had them on our podcast, but you really bring, being an attorney, being a physician. So I hope you stay engaged in this discussion. And to our listeners, that concludes our fascinating discussion with Congressman Mike Kennedy. Really, your unique perspective will help from how we approach AI regulation, as you said, light touch. And thank you for sharing your vision with our listeners. And to our audience, thank you for joining us on Regulating AI. Remember to subscribe for more conversations with key leaders like Congressman Kennedy, who are shaping the future of AI governance. I'm Sanjay Puri, and we'll see you next time. Congressman, fantastic conversation. I really hope you stay engaged. You join the AI caucus, and look forward to having you back again.
Thank you, Sanjay. Love to talk to you now and in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.